I have no knowledge and have never been interested in any type of phenomena. Actually, there is nothing impossible in this matter. The inhabitants on Venus have, except an etheric envelope, a dense aggregate envelope confusingly similar to an organism. They are far ahead of us in consciousness development and have solved their physical problems. They know everything about us, so the visits could be a way to give mankind something to ponder on. Letter from Henry T. Lawrence to Kurt Ostergren, October 12, 1965, my translation. Lawrence also mentioned that aggregate envelopes, or bodies, are atoms and molecules electromagnetically held together. They can be instantly materialized and dissolved. Only organic bodies have different sex, so a temporarily formed physical aggregate form could be made into any gender. Several of the early contactees reported interesting physical differences when describing the visitors. Regarding the Venusian orphan, George Adamski writes, "The flesh of his hand to the touch of mine was like a baby's, very delicate in texture, but firm and warm. His hands were slender, with long tapering fingers like the beautiful hands of an artistic woman. In fact, in different clothing he could easily have passed for an unusually beautiful woman, yet he definitely was a man. As nearly as I can describe his skin, the coloring would be an even, medium, colored suntan. And it did not look to me as though he had ever had to shave, for there was no more hair on his face than on a child's." Desmond Leslie, George Adamski, Flying Saucers Have Landed, Wernalori edition, London 1959. This description indicates the possibility of a non-organic, temporarily formed body. We find the same type of observation made by American journalist Paul M. Vest, who met the Venusian Bill in California, June 1953. He appears out of nowhere to the confused Paul. "I was dumbfounded. An instant before, the streets had been absolutely deserted. Bewildered, I saw him approach the car, smiling. He introduced himself, saying, 'I'm Bill, the fellow who phoned you last night from Los Angeles.' We shook hands, and I recall being aware of the peculiar feel of his hand, as though it were without any underlying bone structure. A casual observer would certainly not be startled by his appearance. In a crowd he would pass as a rather unusual appearing person. But as I studied him more closely while he talked, I was aware of certain strange characteristics in his physical appearance. His skin was exceptionally white, so white in fact that it appeared to have an odd bluish tinge. His cheekbones were unusually high, and his eyes and brows had a peculiar Oriental cast. Yet in no way did he resemble a true Oriental. And I noticed that his ears were oddly pointed and appeared to be more delicate and complex than any I had ever seen. I recalled how odd his hand had felt in my grasp. Looking at his hands, I noticed that his fingers were long and tapering and so smooth that they seemed to be without joints or underlying bone structure. He spoke slowly and clearly with no trace of an accent, but he seemed to be choosing his words with great care. I noticed too that his voice had a peculiar resonant quality." An American contactee, who claims to be working with the same group of visitors who contacted George Adamski, Howard Mangareo, and with whom I have been corresponding for several years, told me of his first experience of the visitors dissolving and forming their bodies. "Before I had my first visits, I was a total unbelieving skeptic. And I said to them at one point, 'Give me proof, personally, and I need never ask that again, that's for sure. When you get proof, my friend, you will feel like the world as you knew it has ended.' I remember the first time there was about 5 space people in 20, name withheld, house talking with her as I quietly watched, and then suddenly one of the men turned, looked directly at me, smiled gently, and then very slowly turned to the kitchen room wall and walked right through the wall. I watched this very closely as he then came back in. Let me tell you, those kind of incidents have a very deep and troubling effect on our minds because we cannot comprehend it." Mail conversation February 25, 26, 2012. American contactee George Van Tassel mentioned several incidents where he observed the visitors suddenly appear and disappear. Interestingly, he also claimed they possessed a small technical device carried on a cord around the neck or suspended under the blouse, that could make them instantly disappear from vision although still physically felt real to the touch. Regarding the difference between the visitor's materializations and mediums, he made this interesting comment: many of the space people live in frequencies of life beyond the human limits. By using methods developed by them, they can bring their body vibrations inside our visual limits as easily as we can condense unseen moisture out of the air into water, and then freeze it into ice. Many spiritualist mediums can materialize people from beyond the door of death. Do not let yourself be confused, however, with these ectoplasmic figures, or the words spoken through them. All figure of people generated through the ectoplasm of another person, are from the transition or earthbound level, or are created by the mind of the medium. George Van Tassel, Materialization and Dematerialization, Proceedings, Volume 3. What chemical elements could the visitor's bodies consist of when materialized? This question was asked by the group listening to the remarkable depth-trance medium Mark Probert in San Diego, May 1957. The question was asked by Ramon Natley, one of the controls behind Mark Probert. The blood nature of these space beings is this: carbon, silicon, and hydrogen. Especially is this true when they take on form so as to be seen by your eyes. In your body the principal component is water, more than 90%, and this is not compressed. But silicon and carbon make for hardness and strength, as in the case of diamonds, which do not deteriorate except under great heat. This makes these beings very durable. It is likely that in taking form such bodies could suffer such injury as to produce seeming death, but the entity concerned would simply withdraw and reconstruct its vehicle when and where desired. Compare this quote with what Henry T. Lawrence writes in The Way of Man, regarding the difference between organic and aggregate bodies. It is of this insight to know that organic life is not a normal phenomenon, does not enter into the general plan of the monad's consciousness development. On other planets, where all have only aggregate envelopes, so-called natural catastrophes are without consequences and there are no so-called accidents. Field investigators of UFO and paranormal phenomena will find many intriguing parallels by correlating data from research with statements from the esoteric tradition. Naturally, the results must be regarded only as alternative explanation models or working hypothesis. This attitude is necessary to keep a psychological balance and intellectual integrity. As John Keel wrote, belief is the enemy, or in the words of warning from Henry T. Lawrence, even if by thorough study you are however much convinced that the hylozoic system agrees with reality, yet you must view it as a working hypothesis. This principled attitude is necessary to avoid all manifestations of dogmatism, fanaticism, and intolerance. Henry T. Lawrence, Knowledge of Life 4, 1995, Online Ed. The Future of Phenomena Investigation. When I began my active involvement in ufology in 1970, field investigation was a relatively simple pursuit. It was not too difficult to ascertain the usual misinterpretations of planets, stars, aircraft, balloons, and the common psychological mistakes made by UFO witnesses. Today the situation is radically different. The digital revolution has made assessment of photos and films exceedingly complicated. Internet is teeming with obvious fakes or highly dubious reports. The field investigator must also be aware of all the new and large and small air vehicles, RPV, drones and model aircraft moving in our airspace. Not to mention Chinese lanterns and possibly black project aircraft of various design. And then we have the cultists, the mythmakers, the more or less credible whistleblowers and the political extremists using the UFO myth to attract members to extreme right, wing or neo-Nazi groups. To this situation must also be added the often debated decline in ordinary or classic UFO reports. Today daylight discs and close encounters cases are exceedingly rare. The cause of this change in reported observations is intriguing. Personally, I have advanced the theory, esoteric intervention theory, that some of the first wave of UFO reports and physical contact cases in the 1940s and 50s was a cultural test made by a benevolent group of aliens from somewhere, Earth-based or extraterrestrial. How is the serious field investigator and student of UFOs to proceed in this complicated situation? First of all, he or she must realize that there is a strong overlap between UFO, Fortean and paranormal phenomena. I believe it was a very wise suggestion when AFU donor Hillary Evans mentioned that AFU, Archives for UFO Research, should adopt a new name including Fortean and paranormal phenomena. Now we are called Archives for their unexplained UFO. Sweden field investigator training and seminars should include basic information on folklore, Fortean and paranormal phenomena. UFO, Sweden and AFU are neutral and open-minded when it comes to theories and paradigms. But no field investigator can study all these phenomena for years without forming some type of worldview to account for the high strangeness of the cases he or she is documenting. Readers of my blog are aware of that I regard the more scholarly presentations of the esoteric tradition as the most interesting and intellectually tenable paradigm, the best working hypotheses I have encountered. Here are some esoteric sources and quotes that could be of interest to field investigators and the future of phenomena investigation. The writings of Jacques Vallée and John Keel made mainstream ufologists aware of the close resemblance between some UFO entities and their devas, nature spirits and elementals described in folklore and religion. According to the esoteric tradition, devas and nature spirits are a parallel evolution to man living at different levels of the multiverse. In the coming centuries, we will become more conscious of each other's existence and be able to cooperate. The reappearance of the Fairy Investigation Society is an interesting cultural phenomenon pointing in this direction. The etheric levels of the plane will be full of an increased activity, and slowly but surely, as the decades slip away, man will become conscious of these levels, and aware of their inhabitants. Men in their etheric bodies will be noted, and communicated with, and the devas and elementals of the ethers will be studied and recognized. Alice Bailey, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, p. 474. A Swedish entity encounter that I would interpret as nature spirits is the Helge Eriksson case of 1931. Elementals was a favorite term of John Keel, who interpreted most entity encounters as elementals. But Keel never studied the scholarly esoteric tradition as far as I know. Elementals are simply mind creations, made consciously by those who know how and unconsciously by religious devotees of all faiths. A form of multiverse robots, good, neutral or evil. Later will come the power to materialize thought, forms. People will come into incarnation that will have the ability temporarily to create and vitalize these thought, forms, and so enable the general public to see them. I have personally investigated one entity close encounter that I would interpret as elementals, the Vagara case of October 1965. An interesting example of thought creation is given in Conjuring Up Philip. An Adventure in Psychokinesis, by Iris M. Owen and Margaret Sparrow. A group of parapsychologists in Canada decided to try to create a fantasy entity named Philip. George and Iris Owen were well-known parapsychologists interested in poltergeist phenomena. The group succeeded in creating an entity they could communicate with and who caused several paranormal phenomena. The famous traveler and author Alexandra David Neal gives a very vivid description of how she created a fantasy monk, a tulpa. This mind creature became so physical that a visitor took it for a live llama. A very fascinating and promising prophecy in esoteric literature is that within 100 years we will be able to photograph and film phenomena of the etheric world and other parts of the multiverse. If true, that would be the definite end of materialism as a mainstream academic worldview. To field investigators of UFO and paranormal phenomena, it would open up a totally new world of entities and phenomena. Until that day, the data and claims made in the esoteric tradition can be used as an alternative working hypothesis. Seeing fairies. Anomalous Books continued to publish interesting and high-quality writings in the UFO, Fortean and paranormal field, classics as well as new titles. The latest is a tome that most probably will be regarded as seminal by academic scholars, Fortians and Esotericists, Seeing Fairies by the late Marjorie Johnson. This Nottingham lady celebrated her 100th birthday in 2011. Unfortunately, she didn't live to see the English edition of her book as she died in 2011. Among folklorists and Swedish ufologists, it has been customary to claim that in the old days people experienced fairies or little people, but today they encounter space people. After reading Seeing Fairies, it becomes obvious that this claim is simply not valid and must be re-evaluated. People still encounter fairies but are perhaps even more reluctant to openly tell of these experiences than UFO witnesses. The social stigma is too great. Johnson's book is a documentation of 400 authentic reports of fairies from the archives of the Fairy Investigation Society. Reports cover the period from around 1900 until the 1990s. The foreword is written by historian Dr. Simon Young, describing Marjorie Johnson as an intelligent, dedicated and passionate woman. Of special interest to UFO and Fortean field investigators is that Simon Young has brought the Sleeping Fairy Investigation Society, FIS, to life. It was originally founded in 1927. Open only to believers in fairies, but has now been refounded with a somewhat altered ideological footing. The refounded FIS will be open, instead, to anyone who is interested in fairy lore, believers or otherwise. It is hoped that membership will stretch from hardened folklorists through Fortean's to the outer fringe of modern fairies and fairy mystics. This is an excellent, open-minded approach reminiscent of the third way ufology of UFO, Sweden. Formulated by the former UFO, Sweden chairman Mr. Klaus Svahn. After reading Seeing Fairies, I enrolled as a member and am looking forward to the database on fairy sightings and encounters to be launched in 2015. That there is a close connection, both historical and in regard to phenomena, between encounters with UFO humanoids and fairies has been obvious since the publication of Jacques Vallée's classic Passport to Magonia in 1969. Many books have since been published following in the Vallée footsteps. UFO Sweden has published sightings of leprechauns in various publications, as field investigators now and then stumble on witnesses who recount not only UFO observations but encounters with the little people. I presented one of these very intriguing reports, the Helge-Eriksson case, 1931, in a former blog entry. An interesting article from a different perspective. Encounters with Immaterial Beings, can be found in the German magazine Journal for Spirituality and Transcendental Psychology. Among the 400 reports documented in Seeing Fairies, there are several cases of special interest to ufologists: multi-witness reports, time loss, abductions, luminous phenomena in connection with fairies. An index and some statistics would have been useful. The close connection between the esoteric tradition and fairies is well documented in Marjorie's book. She herself had several encounters with the little people, and she makes frequent references to esotericists like Charles Leadbeater, Geoffrey Hodgson, Alice Bailey and Flower Newhouse. The best and the most detailed taxonomy of non-human entities from an esoteric viewpoint is the theosophical classic The Astral Plane, 1896, by Charles Leadbeater. An excellent companion volume to Seeing Fairies, regardless of your favorite multiverse paradigm. Finally, some quotes from Marjorie Johnson's foreword to her book. Certain people refuse to believe in fairies because they remain invisible to them, so they think they must be figments of the seer's imagination. Our eyes can take in only a limited number of vibrations, so there must be countless beings around us who are invisible to us because they are on a different wavelengths. And that might apply to some of the inhabitants of other planets. I hope my readers will keep an open mind, and then they might experience some of the fairies' radiant carefree joy, and perhaps regain that sense of wonder that is sadly lacking in the lives of so many people in the world today. Aliens and Bio-Androids. I often return to the 1975 classic The Edge of Reality by the two giants of ufology, Alan Hynek and Jacques Vallée. The discussions and brainstorming in this book are intellectually stimulating and often remarkably radical and open-minded. On page 252, Hynek and Vallée try to develop a theory for the many humanoid cases involving different types of entities. Vallée: how can they breathe our air? How come there are men, ordinary men, with them? There are cases in France where witnesses have seen two dwarves coming out of a landed object, and one man with them. Hayek. These damn things adjust pretty well to our planet. This is an important point that is often overlooked. The chances that conditions on a home planet will be almost exactly like those on Earth are pretty small. Of course, if these reported creatures are really robots, that would solve this problem. Humanoid and contact cases involving human-looking aliens interacting with small entities have been reported for a long time and from many countries. An interesting fact is that human aliens working together with small robots was mentioned already in 1955 by the controversial George Adamski. Here are a few relevant quotes. "Also in this room was a robot instrument which I was cautioned not to describe. I had noticed a miniature version of this robot in the Scout. Inside the spaceships, 1955, p. 60. Each pilot room has a robot. These, working singly or together, can fully govern the course of the ship, as well as warn us of any approaching danger. Ibid. p. 77. True. They have robots to do much of the heavy work that once was done by manual labor. Flying Saucers Farewell, 1961, p. 85. In my blog I have often referred to George Adamski and some of the other 1950s contactees. I would not be surprised if sometime in the future a few of them will be vindicated. Not in the way anticipated by the naive believers and cultists, but from an entirely different direction, presenting their experiences in a new perspective. The recently deceased Danish Adamski co-worker Hans C. Petersen claimed to have discussed the robot issue several times with Adamski. In an article, "The Sinister Forces from Space," he presents a somewhat more complicated view of the problem. The Americans have constructed their own flying saucers, and that they fly just as if they were real space vehicles. Also, that they use the same propulsion system as do the visitors, and that these man-made vehicles are manned with robots, small gray men, all alike and produced alike in American research centers, as copies of the creatures found in the crashed saucers from outer space. The creation of very advanced robots is today not a science fiction idea. Research is going on around the world, especially for military and commercial use. And what is done publicly has probably already been tested in secret black projects by various known and unknown military intelligence organizations and the intelligence arm of global companies. There have been several humanoid encounter cases in Sweden where the robot or bio-android interpretation seem reasonable. Take a look at the Ivar Norman case of 1958 and the Nottal humanoid observed in 2008. A fascinating case where bio-androids are mentioned is the abduction experience of Amory Rivera of Puerto Rico. He was abducted from his car by dwarfish entities in May 1988. When he regained consciousness, Amory found himself in an unknown room together with 15 people, all Hispano-Americans. Magdalena Del Amo, Frickster, documented what happened next in an article published in Flying Saucer Review, Volume 39, Number 1, Spring 1994. Facing them was a tall, dark man of human appearance. His hair was long, down to the shoulders, and his complexion dusky. He would, says the witness, have passed anywhere unnoticed. This man said that he was human, just like them, who had come here from another planet in our galaxy. On either side of him there was a dwarf, similar to those we have already described. Almost all of those present in the chamber gazed with horror at the two creatures. He, the man, seized hold of its dwarf face with one hand and turned it to right and left, at the same time saying that they should have no fear of these entities, as they were biological robots created by them for certain kinds of work, and that they were quite inoffensive. Comment by Rune. The book and also audiobook of this case of Amory Rivera is made and is online as copy on Galactic servers. End of remark. A rather different story is told by the neuropsychiatrist Dr. Shafika Karagula Otla, research companion Dr. Viola Petty-Neal, both well-versed in the esoteric tradition as evidenced by their book Through the Curtain, 1983. A close friend of Shafika Karagula was Ingo Swan, who passed away in February 2013. Ingo Swan is best known for his remote viewing experiments and his controversial book Penetration. Karagula was something of a mentor to Swan, and he has this interesting comment on her knowledge: she also knew how almost all of the world's intelligence agencies operated, those agencies known to exist, and those which exist but are not known or even admitted to by anyone and don't even have names. You see, Shafika was to become one of my three major advisors regarding international affairs of the type that never get mentioned in the media, science, academe, or mentioned even by conspiracy enthusiasts. After a very strange experience in a Hollywood supermarket where Ingo and a friend observed and received unusual psychic vibrations from a woman with black hair and eyes covered by purple sunglasses, Ingo and his friend decided to mention this encounter to Shafika Karagula. During a dinner, they discuss ET civilizations infiltrating Earth, and Viola Pratitneel comments, "There are a lot of them, you know, and many are bio-androids. Shafika Karagula, they're dangerous, you know, and they realized that Earth psychics are their only enemies. Be careful, Ingo, be careful." Penetration, Chapter: The Event in Los Angeles. Delving deeply into these aspects of the UFO enigma is hardly recommended to the faint-hearted. Paranoia can easily become your next-door neighbor. Still, the original Vali question is valid: how come there are men, ordinary men, with them? Will the real alien please stand up? 14 versus Orthodox Science. In the magazine collection at IFU, we have a complete set of Pursuit, published between 1967, 1989 by the Society for the Investigation of the Unexplained, SITU. This organization was founded by Ivan T. Sanderson, well-known biologist who devoted much of his life to cryptozoology and other Fortean subjects. The original name of the organization was the Ivan T. Sanderson Foundation, founded in 1965, but it changed into SITU in 1967. An excellent and very informative site is A Tribute to Ivan T. Sanderson by Richard Grigonese. Pursuit is a treasure trove of 14 data and discussions of all aspects of unexplained phenomena. While perusing some older issues, I found an interesting article, 14 versus Orthodox Science, presenting their, unfortunately still unsolved, basic problems facing UFO and 14 investigators. It was written by Robert J. Durant and published in Volume 7, Number 2, April 1974. Durant begin his article with the sociological fact well known to all ufologists and 14s. There is a great range of physical phenomena that has been reported, and reported time and again for centuries, often in every of the globe, but that orthodox science ignores. From an academic perspective, this is not entirely true. UFOs and paranormal phenomena are studied by orthodox science, but then usually in disciplines like history of ideas, history of religions, folklore and psychology. Within these disciplines, scientists stay on the safe side of the fence, not addressing the really interesting ontological question regarding the reality and origin of all these unexplained phenomena. There are three reasons for this situation, according to Durant. 1. UFO and 14 events are generally of short duration and they occur sporadically. How is one to approach the study of events for which there is little evidence other than an eyewitness report? To be sure, there is a great deal of secondary or circumstantial evidence to back up the eyewitness reports. I refer here to footprints, feces samples, photographs in the case of ABSMs, and to the various deformations of the ground and surrounding foliage in the cases of UFO landings, as well as all of the M effects, movies etc., that form the UFO evidence. But the scientist is neither trained nor accustomed to process anecdotal or circumstantial evidence. 2. 14 events very often are most difficult, if not impossible, to classify in any established scientific pigeonhole. Here we would list falls from the sky, the physical phenomena that are popularly but, we think, falsely, designated psychic phenomena, the flying saucers and so forth. This taxonomic difficulty has had an effect that at times has been humorous and at other times pitiful. Durant mentioned the classic situation regarding UFOs. As the best-selling books claim they were spaceships, everyone thought it was a task for the astronomers to come up with an answer.